Welcome to another edition of Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the award-winning show covering fishing, hunting, conservation, destinations, and other outdoors recreation across the greater Northwest. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lur, Sportsman's Warehouse, Sena Sea Seafood, and Wallowa County Chamber of Commerce and the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery Program. And now, let's see what's happening this week with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome to the show. I've got a pretty interesting hunting story to share with you this week. My best friend, Rusty, was out hunting with a couple of other of our mutual friends, John and Kent, over in the desert wildlife area. They were set up on a wasteway, hoping to intercept some snow geese because there's a special conservation hunt going on in eastern Washington right now, and they didn't see any snow geese at all. They did see a whole bunch of ducks, which wasn't helpful because that's not open. They saw a whole bunch of Canada geese come right over their blind, which also wasn't open. And after a couple of hours, Kent decided he wanted to go for a walk and stretch his legs and, who knows, maybe jump a stray snow goose off the wasteway. Well, he didn't jump a snow goose, but he did come around the corner, and right below him at the water's edge was a coyote that was feasting on something it had caught and killed. And animals being prone to fight or flight, well, this coyote actually charged it, probably because it had nowhere else to go. And Kent unloaded two shotgun shells into it and gave that coyote a dirt nap. Haven't heard of a coyote attack in a long time, but I think it was a matter of circumstance more than anything else. There are definitely a lot of coyotes in the area where we live, so this one being lost is not a huge loss. But interesting story. Like I said, when coyotes attack, you know, usually it's not because they want to, but this one definitely felt cornered and felt it had no way out. So it lunged after Kent, and fortunately, Kent got the drop on him. This week on the show, we've got some great outdoors writers we're going to be talking to. One of them is Jason Brooks. He's going to be talking about shed antler hunting. It's that time of year to talk about that as an activity to do outdoors. But we'll also talk about maybe staying out of the hills for a little while to give those deer and elk a little bit of a break while they're on their winter range and don't need to be stressed right now. Jason's also going to talk about the current state of affairs with the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. Appointed by Governor Jay Inslee, it's definitely not using the North American model of conservation. Instead, this commission has a majority of members that are very agenda-driven and not so much science-based driven when it comes to wildlife management decisions. Gary Lewis, that well-known outdoors personality from Central Oregon, will join us to talk about some rivers and lakes to fish this time of year in Central Oregon because there's some pretty good fishing to be had, and most people are not talking about it. So he's going to put some of these places on the radar for you so you can cast a line and catch a trout or maybe something else right now. Speaking of fishing, we'll also get to talk to Bob Rees, the man behind the Guides Forecast. He puts out a weekly digital newsletter that is all about not just how the fishing has been in Oregon and Southwest Washington, but how it's forecast to be in the days ahead. Very useful publication, and Bob's going to share the latest from Oregon with us in just a little while. Last but not least, for our extended Max Minute, we'll get to talk to Jim Davis. He's a pro staffer for Max Lure, and he's going to tell you about how to go about catching walleye out of a kayak. It can be done this time of year, and he'll tell you exactly how he goes about doing it.
Unhooking a fish that you caught. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight. Tim Higham, an associate professor at University of California, Riverside, studies the biomechanics of suction feeding, which is the way many recreational sport fish species, including bass, salmon, and trout, eat. We talked about what hooks do when removed from fish in catch and release angling.
When people are fishing catch and release, are they almost exclusively using barbless hooks?
It depends on the area. We did this work in Canada and the U.S. Barbless hooks are, in Canada, I believe it's mandatory. I don't recall if in the U.S. it is, but yeah, it's much more common now. But I don't know about other countries. They could still be using barbed hooks for sure. And barbed hooks would obviously cause a lot more damage.
In catch and release, for example, with bass, I have actually seen a fisherman, since they can't get the barb out, they'll actually cut part of the tissue of the fish to open up a hole big enough to get the barb out, and one would conclude that that would only exacerbate the problem you're describing.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but it would very likely increase the healing time, obviously. So not only would the drop in ability to feed be exacerbated, but that would probably be extended for a lot longer period of time. So barbless hooks are by far, in terms of our study, much better than barbed hooks. And if you have a barbed hook, some will cut, but some will just rip it out even harder, and that will just really damage the fish's membranes on the outside of the mouth.
Dr. Higham says there's a fairly significant mortality mortality rate in catch and release, but it does beat the alternative of just killing the fish and throwing it back in or eating it.
Did you hear that? That's the sound of great careers in agriculture, one of which could be yours. With the number of different job boards that are online these days, it can be overwhelming trying to find out what best suits you as an individual in the ag industry. Hey, sift through the clutter and find your agricultural career on the job board focused on you, agcareers.com. AgCareers.com is the leading online job board for the agricultural, food, natural resources, and biotechnology industries. We are committed to fueling the next generation of talent in agriculture in an effort to feed the world. We understand and support the vast number and variety of careers possible in the industry, from welders and biotechnologists to agricultural teachers and software developers. The time to work in agriculture has never been better, with nearly 6,000 career opportunities available on agcareers.com. An opportunity for you is out there. Search for your future today on agcareers.com.
David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight.
The Brewster Salmon Derby is going off August 2nd through the 4th on the Upper Columbia River. There's over $10,000 in cash and prizes, to include a $2,000 check for the king of the pool. Register today at BrewsterSalmonDerby.com.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. Next up, you literally have got a couple of crippled outdoorsmen. They're going to be having a conversation. As you've heard, I managed to rupture the tendon below my patella or right kneecap a couple of weeks ago and had surgery for that. I'm recovering from for the next 7 weeks. And my good friend, well-known outdoors writer Jason Brooks, he is recovering from a serious shoulder injury. Jason, I'm glad you are on the mend a little bit better than I am. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so great to be here. It's been a really long winter. I'm not sure if the listeners can hear, but I have rain hitting the roof as we speak, so you might hear the raindrops. I'm ready to get outdoors. I'm tired of this.
I'm with you on that. And I know one thing folks like to do during this late winter time is to get out there for some shed antler hunting. I've got to tell you, I'm pretty crummy at this. I finally found my first pair of shed antlers side by side, not actually shed antler hunting in the late winter, early spring, but duck hunting just this past fall. And I'll tell you what, my little Springer Spaniel pup Sam, he loves gnawing on those antlers.
You know, and I'll be honest with you, that actually is the best time to go shed antler hunting. My take on it is, anytime I find a shed antler, it's like an Easter egg hunt, right? Regardless of the time of year. But if you can find them in the fall, more power to you, because one, they've been picked over, and two is, you're not really hurting the animal population. I'm a little bit hesitant to tell people to go out and hunt for antlers and, you know, sheds in the springtime, at least this early in the springtime. Let's you know, like you and I have been kind of sitting back because we've had to with our ailments. I hope people kind of put on the brakes a little bit. We've had a really mild winter, which is a good thing for the animals, bad thing for the shed hunters. I'll get into that in just a moment. But, you know, it's early yet. So my big message to everybody out there is, let's just slow this down and let those deer and elk and other animals get through this winter, and then let's go find the antlers.
You know, in western and southern Wyoming, you can't even get out for shed antler hunting until May, and that's meant to protect those mule deer and whitetail deer on their winter range. And we don't necessarily have those restrictions in other parts of the Northwest, but, you know, these animals, even with the relatively mild, get them, use up those reserves running away from you, that can literally lead to dead animals, can't it?
Absolutely. And to follow up on that, Idaho just announced a couple of weeks ago that they are also going to restrict shed antler hunting on state lands. Now, Idaho came out and said, hey, we understand we can't control federal lands and we can't control private lands. And shed hunting is technically not a hunt. So the Idaho Fish Department of Fish and Wildlife can't really tell you no shed hunting, because, you know, they open that up to people's, like, hey, it's your personal choice. But they do control state lands. And so Idaho Department of Fish and Wildlife and the state have said, hey, no shed hunting right now on our state lands. So there are some more states coming out and saying, you know, let's slow down a little bit. The biggest thing is, and people don't realize this, even if you encounter a group of deer that are grouped up, right, this time of year, and you go, oh, they're just watching me, I can just walk on by, they don't care, you know, it's no big deal. Well, what they're doing when they're watching you is a couple of things. One, of course, they're not eating while they're watching you, which is no big deal, because they'll go back to eating eventually. It's the stress level. And people don't realize you're causing stress on the animal. You know, you talk about them running away and using up energy reserves. Yeah, they're running away because they're stressed. They view you as a possible a predator or a threat, and so they're running away. Even them just seeing you approach them in a group like that will elevate their stress levels. And we all know that when a female deer or elk or any species, for that matter, is under stress, that's not good for the fawn or the calf that they're carrying. So it's all, you know, it's a bigger picture, I guess you could say. It's about stress levels and not creating that stress or anxiety in the animals, because they already have enough to stress about, especially trying to get through the winter. So it's a really big picture here. But with that being said, I do want to say finding a set of sheds, especially like you did, it's like hitting a gold mine. I get the thrill. I get the excitement. I get just as excited when I go into the backcountry of Idaho in the fall, find myself looking down at my feet more than I do open ridges because I'm looking for sheds. Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be looking for a bull elk. And I'm looking for a shed, you know. I've only found one pair, by the way, and that was over in Idaho. I found a five-point bull shed side-by-side like that, and that just was like, yes. Otherwise, it's always been singles here and there. I spent hours looking for the other side. You know it's close when they find one. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
So we've had this again, relatively mild winter this year in the greater Northwest. What does that mean for shed hunting? I'm guessing it means that, you know, the lands are going to be accessible earlier and it might be a little bit easier.
Actually, I think it's going to be just the opposite. Yes, well, yes, the lands will be accessible earlier, which we just talked about. Please don't go out there because you can. Hey, right. Look, the slope's open, go out there. But it's actually going to make it a lot harder because the animals are more dispersed. So before, you know, I'd go into certain draws and know this is where, you know, these deer, this, you know, herd elk or whatever, this is where they like to be when it's deep snow or this is where they winter at. Well, when you have basically an open slope like this, the deer and the elk can be anywhere from 1,000 feet to 5,000 feet, depending on where you're at. That's a big gap. And so all of a sudden your little honey holes and stuff might not come to fruition like you'd hope because the animals just weren't there when they dropped their shed. I remember years ago, I found a two-point shed. I was over deer hunting in eastern Washington. I was at 6,000 feet, and I found a two-point shed.
Wow.
Up in the Cascades. And I'm like, it was old, don't get me wrong, it was chalked up and everything. But I was like, well, how did this get here? That means that this two-point was here in February or March. So, yeah, this year might not be the best year to go out shed hunting just because the animals are dispersed and they are, not in those same traditional
sheds. I know for some people it's a business and they're literally selling them as you know, art or to bars and stuff like that. But in your experience, what do most folks do with them?
I found there's three different categories. The first is what most of us fall into is the recreationist. Basically, we're tired of seeing, you know, we got cabin fever, we're tired of sitting on the couch watching it rain and snow all winter, and now we want to get outdoors. So we go out and we stretch our legs, and this is our excuse to get outdoors. That's probably the most people that does shed hunt. Then you have your commercial shed antler collectors. These are guys who go out there and gals who go out there and find the sheds to sell. Like, and you can do this legally. Make sure you check your state laws. But you can go out there, collect them up. These you pay by the pound. So they're out there as a hobby business, you know, type of thing. Like, I'm going to go out and make a couple $100 today on my weekend because I can go out and I got a honey hole where I can find probably 40, 50 pounds of shed antlers between elk and deer. Then you have the third set, which is the craftsmen, and those are the ones who make the crafts, and they're either buying the antlers or they want to go out and find their own antlers, but even if they're buying the antlers, they're driving the shed hunting theory behind this, or they're driving shed hunting. So they're the ones that will build the chandeliers and the lampposts that are just absolutely gorgeous, and that's where, you know, the money is really involved, and if you become a craftsman and you can build one of these beautiful chandeliers, you're getting thousands of dollars for one chandelier. It's a niche, it's very much a niche, and I think even shed hunting a hole is a niche, which is a good thing, but it is fun to do.
All right, last question for you. I understand you've got a turkey hunting adventure that's going to be happening this spring in Idaho.
Yes, I'm so excited about this. I finally talked my father, who's 77 years old, taught me how to hunt since I was, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper, to go turkey hunting with us. He's never turkey hunted before. You know, I took up turkey hunting about a decade ago because my son wanted to get into it. So it's going to be three generations, my dad, myself, my son, and then I got my good friend, Richie Harrod, from the Northwest Outdoorsman. He's going to come along. He's going to film it. We're going to do a TV show with it. So I'm going to have that preserved for the rest of time for me to show my family about my dad's, hopefully, his very first and second turkey. Because you're allowed to in Idaho, and you go out there and call in the birds and have a good time. Of course, it'll be highlighted in my writings and my photography and everything else, and hopefully back on your radio show, we can talk about it and have a good time. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to my next adventure. It's going to come April and get out in the woods finally after about a six-month hiatus.
Well, I am really happy for you, and I can't wait to talk about that hunt and to watch it as well on the Northwest Outdoorsman. Richie Herod puts on that show on Root Sports, and it's definitely a treat to watch. So, Jason, thanks for catching up with us. Always enjoy doing so on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Take care, John. Thank you so much.
Make plans to attend the 62nd Annual Bighorn Outdoor Adventure Show, March 14th through the 17th at the Spokane County Fair and Expo Center. There's going to be over 300 outfitters, guides, and sporting products there for you. There's different theme day each day, lots of activities for the kids, and the show is a great fundraiser for a great organization, the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council. So get hooked on the outdoors and attend the Bighorn Outdoor Adventure Show and find out more at bighornshow.com.
Located in the northeast corner of Oregon, Wallowa County offers a unique destination rich in natural beauty and outdoors recreation. Enjoy the clear waters of Wallowa Lake. Take a tram to the top of Mount Howard for million-dollar views. Hike or ride into the Eagle Cap Wilderness and fish or raft the Wallowa and Grand Ronde Rivers. It's all waiting for you in beautiful Wallowa County. Plan your visit today at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio and to an extended Max Minute brought to you by Max Lure.
It's time for another extended Max Minute brought to you every week by Max Lure. With us this week is Jim Davis. He's a pro staffer for Max Lure, lives in the Tri-Cities area, and he is all about catching walleye and other fish from kayaks on the river. Jim, great to have you back on the air.
Thank you, sir. I'm happy to be back.
Let's talk about some techniques you use in the early spring to catch walleye from a kayak out of the Columbia River.
Early spring, depending on the big walleye or the small walleye, deciding on what I want to fish. If I'm going to fish for the small eater-sized walleye, which is generally what we chase, I'm going to use something like a sonic bait fish. I'll use it as a spoon. I'll jig that vertical. The fish are pretty deep this time of year. Sometimes we'll use jigs, different blade baits. The sonic bait fish you can use as a spoon or a blade bait. If I'm going to chase some bigger fish, it's a little bit different fishing, a little bit different times. I'll fish at night a lot of times. Whole lot of plugs and stuff here. Lately, I've been putting the new little SD hitch that Max has made about a foot in front of my plug. And I've had a couple different nights this last week when we were fishing for these fish in the tanks here at the Washington State Sportsman Show. It made all the difference in the world.
Why don't you explain what the SD hitch is?
The SD hitch is just a little smiley blade with a few beads and a wire through it with a quick detach on the one end. And you just put it on a jig. You could put it in front of a plug like I do. You can put it just about on anything you want to. And the thing for me, when I put it in front of a plug, it just gives that illusion of another little bait fish being chased by a bait fish. And when it's going through the water column, it'll trigger that reaction strike of another fish because you've got two fish chasing each other.
All right. Well, there you go, folks. Whether you're after a smaller eater-sized walleye or maybe one of those trophy walleye you find in the Columbia River this time of year, you've got some options. You can get the Sonic Baitfish and the SD Hitch at sporting goods stores all over the Northwest and online anytime at maxlure.com.
I'm Bob Loomis, and I fish for walleye. Sometimes when I'm out on the water, I feel like a destroyer captain hunting for targets with my electronics. I'm not hunting submarines, though. I'm hunting fish. And when I find that big one on the fish finder, I want to make sure she's going to bite. That's where the SmileBlade Slow Death Rig from Max Lure comes in. The SmileBlade spins and flashes at ultra-slow speeds, and the one-of-a-kind red hook keeps that bait moving in a way the fish can't resist. It's the SmileBlade Slow Death Rig, only from Max Lure.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter, full of the gear you need to succeed this hunting season. Firearms, ammo, archery equipment, decoys, clothing, boots, and more. You'll find it all at Sportsman's Warehouse. Better still, the knowledgeable staff can help you with tips to help you bag a trophy or a limit. Find a location near you or shop online today at sportsmans.com.
Did you know we actually have a sponsorship opportunity available for this show? That's right. You can be a sponsor of Northwestern Outdoors Radio, reaching thousands of listeners every week, tuning in to 69 stations in 7 states. If you have a business that caters to outdoors enthusiasts, this is the platform for you, and you're going to find it's much more affordable than you think. Contact me through my website at northwesternoutdoors.com, and let's get a conversation started. That's northwesternoutdoors.com.
I'm gonna take you fishing, honey. You're gonna love it. Gonna get up before the sun rises above us.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. We've got my old friend Gary Lewis on the line. He's that television host behind the show Frontier Unlimited that you can see. He's also got a podcast. He's also an author, and he's pretty much the man about town when it comes to Central Oregon and the Pacific Northwest, when it's all about fishing and hunting in the media. Gary, great to have you back on the air.
John Cruz, good to talk to you.
Well, it is great to talk to you. I'm a little jealous. I'm, here wearing a full leg and knee brace, but you get to go coyote hunting tomorrow.
Yeah, going coyote hunting tomorrow, and the weather lines up. It's not going to be very windy. It's going to be between snowstorms, and so it should be good. Should be good. I know where I'm going. I got it all figured out.
All right. Well, protect those livestock out there and have yourself a good time. I wanted to talk to you mainly about fishing today. You know, Central Oregon has a lot of good opportunities in the late winter and early spring for trout fishing and more that don't get a whole lot of press. And I thought we'd visit some of those, especially since you just happen to be the author of Fishing Central Oregon, which is an award-winning book that really covers a lot of this.
Yeah. You might have heard of football. It's a thing that people watch, you know, and there's a big game, and that's the day I go fishing. And so I went. There were two people at my favorite place. One of them left right around the time the game started, and then the other guy, you know, just got out of my way. And so I had the whole section of river to myself, and there was a lot of trout. I only got one bite.
Oh, wow.
But it was a 4-pound rainbow, and I am not ashamed to say I ate it.
Wow.
And it cut like a salmon, and it was obviously beat up from being in the hatchery raceways. It's not going to win any beauty contest, and it was a good trout. I ate it that night. That was my Super Bowl weekend.
Well, I'm impressed. So I'm not sure I should even ask the river, because I sense a little hesitance. Are you willing to name at least what river we were fishing here?
Okay, so I was fishing, yeah.
Fair enough. You don't have to give
it's
it up.
Really
I'm not
hard.
Make you do that.
It's really hard to say.
I'm not going to make you do it. I'm not going to make you do it. But I do want to name a few specific rivers of fish well this time of year. One of them is the Crooked River. That's one that I always hear about people fishing in the late winter. The flows look good on it. What are folks catching out of there?
Okay, so the Crooked, right now, you can catch whitefish and rainbows. And it fishes with blue-winged olives, you know, this time of year, especially if you get the right kind of February or March afternoon, and you'll see these little bugs coming up out of the water. The Crooked River, the Fall River, and the Deschutes near Maupin, you know, these should be in your top four, and the Metolius should also be there in that same conversation. And you fish from the Allingham Bridge down on the Metolius. The Metolius is one of these places where it's managed for wild trout, and you're going to release everything you catch. And you go there to fish, not to catch. And if you catch, that's a bonus, and you call it a good day either way. It's all about managing your expectations. But what's really been doing well right now also is Ochoco Reservoir, right outside of Prineville, and Prineville Reservoir also.
So are those both trout lakes?
Yeah, they're trout lakes. They're also there's also warm water fish in those lakes, but what you're going to be catching right now are trout. My dad's been doing really well in Ochoco, and we fished there right before the turn of the year, and the trout are fat.
All right.
And catching them on flies, too, flies or bait.
I was going to ask whether it was a trolling show or a fly fishing show or a bait show, so all the above.
All of the above, you can fish it from the bank very easily, and Prineville Reservoir as well. I would go fish down around the dam if I was going to fish Prineville.
If you were looking for your best chances for success, let's say maybe you want to take a kid along with you and get him into a fish, besides the trout pond at a sportsman show, where would you take him?
Well, I would look at the weather forecast for sure, and I'd look at either Ochoco Reservoir or Pine Hollow if the ice is off of Pine Hollow. That'd be a good one, Pine Hollow Reservoir up by Tie Valley. And other options would be like Bikini Pond down by the Dalles. That should still be fishable this time of year. My dad and I hit it once 2 years ago, right about this time, and it fished real well. Also, I think it's called Taylor, which is in the city limits of the Dalles, is another good one.
All right. Well, I'm always looking for an excuse to go to the Dalles, so those are two good ones there. Are these just both little city-stocked ponds that are in, you know, little impoundments of the Columbia River?
Bikini Pond is outside of town a few miles, and it's one of these backwaters off of the Columbia, and it's stocked by ODFW. They stock it about six times a year, and it's probably been a while. I think it's been since October that they stocked it, but it's one that, you know, if the water level's right and it's not too windy, it can be a pretty good one. The other one is a bigger lake. It's usually the one that's closer to town. It's muddy, and for that reason, I'd look at that as a bait fishing, bank fishing expedition there.
Well, there you go. Head to the Dalles for a little trout fishing, as well as these other lakes and rivers that Gary has told you about. And we've got to ask about Fishing Central Oregon. What are folks going to find in the pages of this book? And more importantly, where can they buy it?
Well, the Fishing Central Oregon book, it's in its sixth edition now. I worked on the last couple of editions before I bought the book and took it over. And it's available in a lot of grocery stores, Bi-Mart stores, and especially fly fishing shops. You can order it or ask for it at any of the fly fishing shops, and then on my website as well. And then that big company that with the trucks running around, can't think of them right now, but you can also buy it from them.
All right. And if they order from your website, will they get an autographed copy?
Yeah, you know, and if you reach out to me and say, hey, Gary, you know, we need an autographed copy, autograph it for little Jeffrey, you know, I'm happy to do that.
All right. Well, the website to do that, folks, is GaryLewisOutdoors.com. That's GaryLewisOutdoors.com. Get yourself an autographed copy of the award-winning book, Fishing Central Oregon, and make plans to take advantage of the late winter, early spring opportunities that you can enjoy in the Beaver State, right in the middle of the Beaver State. Gary, thanks as always, sir.
John Cruz, good talking to you. Thank you again.
In other news, those of you who've listened to the show for a while know that I love to dabble into tournament bass fishing, and I'm going to be participating in several bass tournaments at my home water of Potholes Reservoir in eastern Washington, where Mardon Resort is going to be ground zero for both launching and weigh-ins. There's three tournaments being put on by Russ Baker, the owner of Limit Out Performance Marine, and registration is open for some of them right now. In particular, we are talking about the Pro-Am event. That is taking place April 25th and 26th at Potholes and Mardon Resort. And the way it works is this. Each day, you are going to fish as an amateur with a pro. Now, a pro is basically just a bass boat owner. He probably does have more experience than you, and it's a great opportunity to learn from a different pro each day because you're going to have a different pro each day of the tournament. And I learned a whole lot last year that really helped me in the big bass tournament I fished the following week. Looking forward to learning a lot this week as well. Now, the pros, the registration is $600, but the payout is pretty darn impressive. It is a brand new Phoenix bass boat for the person who wins. Last year, the winner was none other than Luke Clausen. He is that professional major league fisherman, and he just edged out one of the local Sharpies for that bass boat. We'll see what happens this year. As for the amateur, well, the top amateur, nothing to sneeze at here, $5,000 paycheck. And with any luck, I'll be that guy because the way it works is your weights are shared. So if I go fishing with Pro A on day one and we weigh in a limit of 15 pounds, even if he's the one that weighed in maybe 12 out of the 15 of those pounds, I take forward that 15 pounds on my second day. And if I could have a day with maybe 21 pounds, I might find myself in the running for a win here. So we shall see what happens. And as the amateur, I only have to pay $300 to participate fishing off the back of a pro's bass boat. Fished this last year, learned a lot, all sorts of fun, love Potholes Reservoir in the spring. The fishing for both largemouth and smallmouth is very good. And if you want to fish with me, the website to go to is BigBassTrail.com. The website again, BigBassTrail.com. I can't wait to see you there.
Got a bamboo pole and a leaky boat. It ain't much, but if you bail, it'll float. I'm gonna take you fishing, honey. You're gonna love it.
He's back. That's right. I convinced Jason Brooks to spend a little bit more time with us this week to talk about something very interesting. That would be the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you for having me. Glad to be back.
So our state commission, the members are appointed by the governor, in this case, Jay Inslee, and the majority of our commission that's been appointed by Governor Inslee now is kind of left-leaning, to say the least, in terms of how they manage animals. Now, generally speaking, most fish and wildlife agencies use the North American model of conservation to manage different species of fish and game. But the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission, the majority members now, are taking a different approach. It's called a preservationist approach. Why don't you explain how that differs?
Well, they can call it preservationist approach. What it is, it's agenda-driven approach. And Jay Inslee tipped his hand to this last spring when the WDFW, which is a government agency, okay, and the commission oversees this agency as far as policy making goes. And the whole idea behind the commission is to be a voice of the people throughout the state to make sure that the WDFW is in line with providing the opportunities for fish and wildlife users and recreationists in Washington State. When the governor Inslee appointed these commissioners, they went to this agenda approach, which is their own agenda or the governor's agenda versus the people of the state. It's pretty obvious. And back to the wolf thing. So last spring, the WDFW decided to start to work on a proposal on delisting the wolf. Now, keep in mind, the gray wolf is delisted in eastern Washington federally. Western Washington is still listed as endangered. But state-wise, it still was as dangerous to the entire state under state guidance. So federal versus state. We're talking state here, not federal, right? Federal's already released that in eastern Washington. So when WDFW made this proposal to downgrade it to sensitive, and then Jay Inslee ordered his commission to vote no. And this proposal was still being made. They haven't even proposed it yet. They haven't even approached it yet. They just announced, hey, we're going to be making a proposal to try and downgrade the listing of the gray wolf to sensitive. And the governor, before this proposal occurred, told his commission, made it very well aware, his commission, to vote no. And so, like, wait a minute here. This is agenda-driven. You haven't even looked at the proposal yet. It's not even completed yet. So that was the kickoff. That was one of the kickoffs, the spring bear debacle, where they decided to eliminate spring bear hunting, and they even told their own biologist that they didn't want to hear the numbers. And they even told hunters in a meeting, we want to hire your own independent biologist because we're not going to listen to the numbers you're giving us. And the hunters pointed out, but we're using your numbers. And so that is, again, a red flag, agenda-driven. I don't call it preservation-driven. They're trying to actually define conservation. They want to change the meaning of conservation. That's how this has gone. The good news is, for the listeners, and I'm going to keep this very generic, I don't want to get too much into it, is we will have a new governor next year. And with that, I think you're going to see the commission either completely be gone or changed. You know, I mean, there's already been a representative saying we should delimit the commission, which he knows, you know, Representative Wilcox or Lacey did that, and he knows it's not going to get passed, but it's highlighting it. So I think that we're going to see it change back and go back to, hey, wait a minute here, this is not how this actually works. You can't come in and dictate how we're going to run an agency that's supposed to be for the people. So just hold our breath. Let's just relax a little bit. I still think we need to keep the pressure on as far as the hunters and anglers need to keep the spotlight. And luckily, the tribes have jumped on board on this last month when the commission decided to change their entire mission statement. And the tribes are like, whoa, because we're part of this. Now you're starting to change how we manage things or what our voice is. So it's going to be interesting. The future is going to be very interesting. I think we all need a little bit of patience. Let's give them enough rope to hang themselves and just see where this goes. But keep the pressure on by all means.
Absolutely. And let's hope that some common sense comes back to our state Fish and Wildlife Commission in Washington State and that they actually start listening to the science instead of their hearts and feelings. So we will see, as you said, and patience is important.
One last thing, I know that we're out of time, but really quick is I think that's going to happen when we have a change in the guard. I really do, for what it's worth. I think that the change is coming. It's going to have to be flipped and it's going to change. That way. It's not going to be these commissioners. These commissioners, I think, are too under the pros of Inslee, who will all be gone next year. That's my guess.
All right, folks. We'll get out there and vote. That's the bottom line. And do so thinking about what kind of commission you want to have as well. Jason, thanks as always, sir.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got Bob Rees on the line. He's the man behind the Guides Forecast, and this is a online digital subscription that you can get. There's the free edition, and then there's the in-depth premium edition, and they really cover the fisheries of Oregon and Southwest Washington very well. Bob, great to have you back on the air.
John, thanks for having me. Nice to hear from you.
So let's start off with steelhead fishing, especially on the Sandy and Clackamas River. How are things looking right now?
You know, good news over this way, much to my surprise after a couple of depressing years here in recent history. The steelhead seem to be coming back quite strong this season. So Clackamas is fishing well. The Sandy's fishing well. I just got off text message with our Sandy River hatchery manager, Ryan Queen, up there. And he said, although there aren't a ton of fish back to the hatchery, I think they've had upwards of 300, 200 of which they've recycled. He says that, and he's an avid angler himself, there's a lot of fish in the Sandy River, and anglers are having a good time with it. So it's been a surprisingly good start to, you know, these fisheries peak in February, and so we're up to a good month.
Southwest Washington steelheaders have really been struggling in recent years with low returns and little opportunity. But you've got the North Coast rivers over by the Tillamook Coast, and a broodstock program seems to have really strengthened those fisheries. How are they looking this winter?
Yeah, and it's reflective on the North Coast as well. And even the Willamette River, you know, although there's no real steelhead fishery in the Willamette itself, counts over the fall has been quite impressive. So it's clearly a year where steelhead have rebounded. I think I even saw a summer steelhead prediction for the Columbia, and that's up from last year's unexpected bump as well. So hopefully we've turned a corner on steelhead North Coast. A lot of the same things. Some of the washed out hatchery stocks that we have come back in mid-December to early January, those are still not performing well. I think it's a product of somewhat of an inbreeding or just a washed out stock of hatchery fish that aren't performing well. But the brood stock fish on the Wilson and then the Seca systems have continued to produce good catches. And this year is, as I talked to some guides in recent days, slightly better than what we've seen last year. And there have been some explosive catches. 2 weekends ago during the thaw, there was some really good fishing that a lot of anglers got in on. So we're kind of back down to low, moderated levels of river systems and back to, you know, mediocre fishing where anglers are having to really work for them. But definitely some good signs of a better run this year.
And when it comes to those North Coast rivers, what's the technique you like to use as a guide to get your clients a steelhead bite?
You know, I'm old school, and I don't do as many steelhead trips as I used to because the volatile water conditions and the volatile runs. But I'll oftentimes, blowing my secret here, is I'll let everybody start early and flog the water and kind of come in with a later start. Because everybody's bobber dogging single beads or small baits these days, and certainly an effective method, especially if you're one of the first ones down the river to hit the holes. Or if the fish are moving on higher water situation, you can definitely come across fresh biters. But when the water is down low and stable, like it has been for the last week and a half, I like starting later, coming in behind those folks and pulling plugs, the old school pulling plug situation, and picking off more aggressive biters that are more territorial than they would be in higher flows.
Well, there you go. That's some great advice there. Last but not least, if folks want to subscribe to the Guides Forecast and get it in their email box weekly, how do they do so?
Yeah, as you mentioned, and I appreciate that, John, is that folks can sign up for a free version of the newsletter just by going to www.theguidesforecast.com. We believe we're the most detailed and accurate fishing report, as well as the forecast, which is what really people subscribe to, giving a forecast of how the fishing is going to be over the weekend and into the following week. So they can choose to do the free version, or they have two versions. take advantage of from a paid perspective, either $32.95 or $54.95. Each have its own benefits for folks that choose to exercise it.
What are some of the benefits to being a premium subscriber?
Well, you get an article either 1 week from Bill Monroe, a longtime outdoor writer down here in Oregon, or Buzz Ramsey, plus some great content from Santa Claus Steelhead Magazine that we incorporate into our newsletter on a weekly basis. So we have some other benefits. We do an annual webinar so folks have an idea what the 10 best opportunities are for Oregon. And so we talk about upcoming fisheries and just really try and give people the best opportunity they can to take advantage of what to look ahead for in the coming year and certainly in the coming week with the forecast section of those paid versions.
All right. Well, up your fishing game right here in the Pacific Northwest by subscribing to the Guides Forecast. The website to go to, theguidesforecast.com. That's theguidesforecast.com. Bob, thanks for sharing this with us this week on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thank you so much, John.
Make plans to attend the 62nd Annual Bighorn Outdoor Adventure Show, March 14th through the 17th, at the Spokane County Fair and Expo Center. There's going to be over 300 outfitters, guides, and sporting products there for you. There's different theme day each day, lots of activities for the kids, and the show is a great fundraiser for a great organization, the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council. So get hooked on the outdoors and attend the Bighorn Outdoor Adventure Show and find out more at bighornshow.com.
This year, resolve to immerse yourself into the great outdoors. Whether you're learning to hunt, fish, hike, camp, paddle, or grill, or are looking to take yourself to the next level, the place to go for the gear you need is Sportsman's Warehouse. With over 145 stores around the nation, Sportsman's Warehouse is truly America's premier outfitter. Find a store near you or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com. That's sportsmans.com for Sportsman's Warehouse.
Hunt of a Lifetime is a nationwide nonprofit organization dedicated to providing hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under who suffer from life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. These adventures make big differences in the lives of those who participate in them, and in many cases are literally a dream come true that brings hope and therapy to their lives. Find out more, get involved, or donate today at huntofalifetime.org. That's huntofalifetime.org. huntofalifetime.org.
Did you know we actually have a sponsorship opportunity available for this show? That's right. You can be a sponsor of Northwestern Outdoors Radio, reaching thousands of listeners every week, tuning in to 69 stations in 7 states. If you have a business that caters to outdoors enthusiasts, this is the platform for you, and you're going to find it's much more affordable than you think. Contact me through my website at northwesternoutdoors.com, and let's get a conversation started. That's northwesternoutdoors.com.
Pheasants Forever is working hard every day to ensure there's more wildlife habitat for the future. To join us, go to pheasantsforever.org.
Before we go today, we've got time for one last shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with your host, John Cruz.
I'm glad you're back because it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week. And this one is about official state trees. Now, when you think of Washington State, you think of the evergreen state, and you would think that the evergreen would be the state tree, but believe it or not, it's not. That's your question of the week. What is the official state tree designated by the legislature in 1947 for Washington State? Is it A, the ponderosa pine, B, the Douglas fir, or C, the western hemlock? If you know the answer, you know what to do. Just go to our website at northwesternoutdoors.com, shoot us a message through our contact us page, and let us know your answer. Or you can just email me at my email address at john@northwesternoutdoors.com. Let me know, what is the official state tree of Washington State? Is it A, the ponderosa pine, B, the Douglas fir, or C, the western hemlock? One lucky person who guesses right wins that $25 gift card we give away every week from America's premier outfitter. And with any luck, it may be you. And by the way, check your emails after the contest. There's been several times over the past year where I've alerted people that they're the winner, and they never answer back, and that gift card just gets recycled. So shoot me an email, check your emails next week, and let's see if we can make you a winner. On that note, it is time to go, but here's hoping you are blessed in the days ahead. Here's hoping that you're healthy, maybe even healthier than me with my crippled leg. And until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.